A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-.
So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello, welcome to Forever 35, a podcast about the things we do to take care of ourselves. I'm Kate Spencer.
And I'm Tori Shafrir.
And, you know, we're just not experts.
But we are two friends who like to talk a lot about serums.
And before we get into it, we always like to remind you that you can visit our website, forever35podcast.com, for links to everything we mentioned on the show. You can follow us on Twitter at Forever35Pod and Instagram at Forever35Podcast. You can join the Forever 35 Facebook group where the password is serums. Over on our website, you can find our newsletter, which we release bimonthly, Forever35Podcast.com/newsletter. And you can always contact us. We love to hear from you. We really love it. So you can text us or send us a voicemail at 781-591-0390. And our email is forever35podcast@gmail.com.
Now, I just want to note that some of you may be like, wait, I thought Kate was on vacation. And actually, Kate is on vacation. We recorded this way ahead of time. And that is why... We did a pre-record. And so we're not going to do our typical opening of a full-length episode where we kind of gab. Just going to get right into the interview so Kate can go off and be on vacation. So our guest today is Danielle Henderson, a repeat Forever 35 guest.
Yeah, one of the earliest Forever 35 guests.
One of the earliest ones. And just, Danielle is just such a marvelous human. I just can't say enough great things about Danielle.
One of the funniest and smartest writers, I think, period. And
I completely agree.
Her new memoir, The Ugly Cry, is so great. And it is heartbreaking and hilarious and just beautifully written. So we get to talk all about it with Danielle.
Yes. And, you know, I'm going to read her bio, but as I'm just glancing at it, I'm realizing that when we first talked to her, she had just embarked on her TV writing career. Like, I think she had just moved to LA.
Yeah, I think you're right. And like, it just speaks to how talented she is because now she's running TV shows. And
yeah. And that was 3 years ago.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, yeah. Anyway, all right. Here is Danielle's bio. She is a TV writer, Maniac, Divorce, Dare Me, and more, retired freelance writer and former editor for Rookie. A book based on her popular website, Feminist Ryan Gosling, was released by Running Press in August 2012. You can still buy it. You probably should. And her memoir, The Ugly Cry, was published in June 2021. Danielle grew up in Warwick, New York, a town ensconced in beautiful fall foliage, rolling farms, festivals dedicated to fruit, and mild class warfare and explicit racism that was never openly discussed or acknowledged. She was absolutely shaped by these factors, as well as the town's blessedly close proximity to Manhattan, the city where she came of age. Instead of doing drugs or drinking, Danielle taught herself how to read a bus schedule and skipped many days of school in an effort to mitigate her desire to live in a more temperate place with the reality that she would be stuck in Warwick for quite some time. As a result, she has sat through more live tapings of The Late Show with Conan O'Brien than any earth science or chemistry class, a retrospectively wise choice. In the past 20 years, she has parked her full wild life in Alaska, California, New York City, Boston, England, Rhode Island, and Seattle. She once drove from New York to Alaska by herself and has survived a bear chase, four Alaskan winters, junior high school, working in a convent, Aquanet hairspray, acid wash jeans, and the entirety of the Mets 1987 season. Elle parle un peu de français, but mostly ordering food and the type of colloquial cursing you would use on the metro, like hoping your dick falls off or a vulture eats your eyes. She is very tall and often forgets that she has freckles. Strangers take every opportunity to remind her of both. Now, needless to say, we usually cut down people's very long bios. But Danielle's was so good.
That's so funny.
And so funny. And so her, that there was no way we could condense it.
Also, can I make a point of adding, like, I don't know how many people were kind of coming up on the internet in the mid to late aughts, but like feminist Ryan Gosling was such a huge deal. It was so brilliant and so well executed. I mean, it was just like,
it was
right
iconic.
To say it? Yeah, it was like the zeitgeist. Is that the appropriate word?
Yeah.
So, I just want to like go back and review it if you've never seen it or heard of it. It's just like, it's beyond. It's so good.
Yeah. All right. Well, without further ado, here is Danielle Henderson.
Well, I mean, we can just start gabbing because Danielle, we're going to read your bio ahead of time. So we can just launch into it. Because we're so excited that you are here. I mean, and also because you are coming back on the podcast as one of our earliest guests.
Yes, I am so excited to be back. I am like marveling at the changes and the growth, and I'm just so proud of you both, truly.
Well, we're marveling at your changes and growth.
Yeah.
And we're proud of you.
I'm a huge fan. You know, I've been listening. I used to save episodes for when I traveled because I'm like, oh, I want to listen to them on the plane. Like, it's very comforting and soothing. And then, you know, nobody went anywhere for a year and a half. But now I'm renovating my own kitchen. And so I'm like, ooh, I can go back and like listen to my favorites. And yeah, I kind of have like a running playlist of Forever 35 for when I'm in here just doing work.
Are you renovating it yourself, like you, Danielle, doing the renovations?
Yeah.
Holy crap.
Wow. Can you, so I know Kate and I are kind of aware of your situation, but for the benefit of our listeners, can you tell them about your new home and how this came to be?
Yeah. So I lived in LA for about 4 years, and just about 3 weeks ago, I moved back to New York, back to my hometown in Warwick, and I bought a farm. It's a very small farm, but it's got a few acres, and I'm kind of regenerating this farm because it hadn't really been Not much has been done to it in the past 25 to 30 years. But the main reason that I'm back is because my grandmother is moving in with me. So she's going to kind of have the whole bottom floor of the house because she can't really do stairs anymore. And the reason she's moving in is that she's 88. She's going to be 89 soon. And she has dementia, and she's just very quickly getting to a point where she can't live on her own, even though she is still fiercely independent. So I thought this is a good compromise for both of us. I was ready for kind of an easier life. I was kind of done with cities, and she needed some help. So I just bought this house, and it's quiet, and it's, you know, in the woods, and, I've got a nice screened-in porch, and she's just excited to get here. So because of that, I'm doing a lot of the renos myself. I'm mostly doing the renos myself because I'm impatient, and it's been taking a long time to like order products and do things. And I was like, oh God, I'll just do it myself. Like, I don't need to buy everything brand new. Wow. And so I'm painting cabinets. I did buy a Sawzall yesterday because I have to cut part of the countertop and do some stuff with the tile to make room for my new fridge. So I'm going to do that today. I'm cutting my counter today. I have to reinstall my dishwasher where it is right now, it's kind of pushed up against some pipes and it's not sitting flush. So I have to reconfigure some of the under cabinets so I can move the dishwasher. And then I am, so it's mostly paint, mostly refurbishing. And then I'm framing out the laundry room next week, taking a cabinet from the kitchen and a half bath downstairs and moving the washer and dryer over and then kind of moving stuff around in the smaller bathroom. So it's a little bit, so it makes a little more sense. So yeah, I'm just doing it.
Have you ever done anything like this before? Like
no.
The physical remodeling of a space? Wow.
No, but I'm pretty handy. Like I've done small projects and I'm pretty creative. You know, I like to be hands-on about a bunch of stuff. And I just, you know, I read a lot. So I, you know, I read a bunch of stuff and watched some YouTube videos and I'm not going to do anything dangerous. Like I'm leaving the electric and the plumbing for someone else.
Yeah.
You know, like I can shut off some switches and make sure I don't get electrocuted, but right. I can't like reconfigure electric in my house. So, yeah, so I'm leaving that part to the experts, but, yeah, I can pick up a toilet. I can pick up a sink.
I mean, you know, well, first of all, that is very impressive. But second, like you, when you were on our podcast originally, you talked about crafting as one of your self-care practices. Mm-hmm. And there's, in my mind, like just kind of watching you purchase this home and now learning that you are rebuilding it in your own vision and doing it yourself, like what is more like loving to yourself and empowering than that? I mean, that just feels, it sounds amazing.
It's truly the main way that I do self-care is to kind of nest and create a space, both emotionally and physically. So I know that you usually ask your listeners what they do for self-care first and foremost, and that's usually it. It's like my emotional self-care is I don't have a lot of apps on my phone, a lot of social media apps. I did have to recently kind of re-engage with Twitter because of book press, but you know, I don't read news online. I don't read, you know, I just don't read a lot of stuff. I weeded through a lot of the things I was following over the last year. And I really just kind of created a space that I know when I open Instagram, for example, I'm just going to see news from people I love and things that I enjoy. And that's nice. There's no pressure of like, oh, I have to follow this person, even though they're always a drag. Like I just got rid of all of that. And then, in my personal space, it's really important to me to feel like I can look around a room and understand it, you know, understand all the choices that were made and, you know, the color and, you know, I'm doing a lot of painting and wallpaper removal right now. And, I just want to look around my house and feel like, you know, some real ownership over it, you know, cause I won't actually own it for like 3 decades, but to have some real ownership right now. And it's soothing. There's nothing more soothing than a palm sander.
No, you're right. I mean, I've never used one, mind you, but that sounds like it would be very satisfying.
Yeah, and empowering.
Yeah, deeply. And I think that's important.
Yeah. So are you just done with LA now? What does this mean for your TV writing career?
My TV writing career is still going. Before I left LA, I started, I started running my first show. So as a showrunner, that was great because I was able to make different decisions. So if I want to continue doing, like Zoom rooms or remote rooms, then I can do that. But I will have to come back to LA for filming. So it'll be, you know, a couple months out of the year. And I worked that out with my brother, before I bought this house. I said, you know, the only thing I need truly is that when I travel for any reason that you can please come stay with grandma. Like,
yeah.
And he said, oh yeah, no problem. Like she has a nurse during the day, but I just don't want her to be alone at night. So, he and my sister-in-law were like, yeah, of course. We'll definitely help out. So it's still possible for me to have my TV career, thankfully.
That's amazing.
That's amazing. And just like, it's so nice to hear of someone who is like setting up their life in a way that like really works for them, you know,
Their own terms. Yeah.
On their own terms. So yes. I really admire that.
I would like to hear more about how you got to that point because we'll get there though, because I want to circle back to just your house and how it correlates to so much of your book because Okay, so I don't want to spoil your memoir for any listeners who have not read it, but everyone should go out and read it. It's so amazing. It's so poignant. It's so moving, but it's also so funny, which is, I think, what you have done best in all your writing for years. But so much of it, involves, one, the experience of never really fully feeling like you have a home, the constant moving of the physical space, as well as, you know, not being, you know, not being with your mother, and now, and the moving in with your grandmother, who is really this, such this central, amazing figure of your book and of your life. And so to then be able to see, as we know you now, that's this kind of full circle moment. I'm just kind of personally curious, what is that? Is it surreal? Is it moving? What does it kind of feel like to have had this fraught relationship with the physical place that you are from and so many emotional connections to it, both good and bad? And how does it feel to come back into it, like Dory was saying, on your own terms?
Yeah, it feels very empowered, I will say, that Dory used the correct word there. I feel like, you know, I've visited over the years, of course, so it was never like I was that far removed, but I haven't lived here since I was, you know, 17. There were a few months when I was in my 20s before I moved to Alaska, where I moved back in with my grandma to save some money, but I haven't really lived here since then. But coming back, it felt really wonderful because I'm coming back completely on my own terms. I don't necessarily, you know, I don't necessarily have to engage with things here that bothered me in the past. You know, for example, like the racism. I think that the town itself has progressed in a lot of ways, so that is something that the whole town is now aware of and is trying to combat. It's a really progressive place, and I feel, you know, immediate kinship with a lot of people here. But what's really wonderful more than anything is that I'm not coming back as a high schooler, you know, like I'm coming back as a fully formed adult 44-year-old woman, and I'm bringing everything that I've learned over the years and everything that I became over the years back with me. So I feel more like I'm creating a better space here by being here. And, you know, I could be lying to myself. Who knows what'll happen next year? We'll catch up again in a few months. But I really do feel like, you know, it makes sense that I have some comfort here because this is where I was raised. And the things that used to really impact me negatively about being here are now things that I can do something about. You know, I can travel. I can go out into the world. I can, you know, kind of create the community that I want here. I don't have to be around certain people all day, every day. And I'm very lucky because two of my oldest high school friends also within the last 3 years bought homes and moved back here. So wow. One of my friends, wow, Sarah, lives literally across the road. She lives very close. Oh my gosh. Walk to each other's houses. And my friend Tim, who's this artist and professor, he lives with his husband like half a mile away. So I already feel like I'm coming back to, you know, I'm kind of being embraced by them and the lives that they've created here. So, you know, I feel wonderful. I feel really lucky. And it's nice that I don't have that friction with this place anymore. I think that I had to go out in the world and do a lot of healing from my experience here. But to not have that friction here means I can just enjoy the rest of my grandma's life with her in a place where she wants to be. Because she did not want to move to LA. I tried. I was like, please just like move with me to LA. It'll be great. She's like, absolutely not. So yeah, I feel grandmother, like, very impressed.
She seems amazing. And also, I mean, she's a challenging figure, but such a nurturing and like her own way, like not in a conventional way that we all think of, especially when we think of grandmas. But your relationship with her is just so beautifully described in your book. And she's clearly such an important person to you. Could you describe her a little bit for our listeners and maybe also just share a little bit about what you have kind of learned about life from her?
Yeah, she is, she's formidable. She is definitely the very definition of tough love, emphasis on the tough. So her whole MO when I was a kid was, and I didn't realize this until I was older, of course, but she was very concerned with and focused on helping me become independent and become a woman who could make her own decisions and have her own opinions. And in doing so, she kind of, you know, would emphasize things that were not really typical for a teenage girl to experience. And she, you know, she really, you know, she pushed me to have an after-school job as, you know, as soon as possible. I wanted one, but she also was like, yeah, you should use the money you make from that job to buy what you want, because now you're an adult and you can do that. And she taught me how to have a bank account and, you know, how to balance a checkbook. And she just really wanted me to be fearless, I think, about the way that I went out in the world. And she wanted me to be prepared. So her way of doing that was, as a young child, was to give me advice from horror films, because she loves horror movies. So again, we grew up in the woods, and she would constantly be, you know, pointing at the TV and be like, yeah, you see those kids out there having sex and getting in trouble? That's why you don't go in the woods. And I'm like, we can't help it. We live here. We live in the woods. What are you talking about? She really is like, she's very, very, very in touch with pop culture. She loves The Walking Dead. Her two favorite shows are The Walking Dead and Naked and Afraid. But she just loves people. And she's so funny, and she's funny and she's bright. But I think that because of the era that she grew up in, you know, like in the 30s and 40s, she had to be tough to exhibit those funny and sensitive sides of herself. So, it's very strange, because I know that it's bizarre that I even have a grandmother at 44 years old, but we have over the years just become such good friends, and we've just grown closer and closer and closer as time has gone on. And I really do believe, and I know I wrote about this in the book, but I really do believe that, you know, we have been connected since the day I was born.
Ugh. Mm. Oh. Sorry, I literally just finished. I just read like the last 20 pages like 2 hours ago, and and that comes up again at the end, and it gives me, yeah, it's amazing. I mean, that kind of relationship is, it's honestly, it feels more rare these days too, especially with a grandparent, yeah, as, you know, people live farther away from family and things separate us. I mean, that's, it's, yes. I don't know. It just is very, yes, moving.
And she was also, you know, I don't think she would ever call herself this, but I've always categorized her as the first feminist I ever met. And I think that she wouldn't necessarily prescribe to like any kind of particular ethos, but she was absolutely someone who embodied this notion that women can do anything, and particularly Black women. I think that was really important for her to send me out in the world and not feel like I was inferior. It's just, she's a dynamic person. She's still hilarious. I went and had coffee with her the other day. It's great that I can see her every day now, even though she hasn't moved in yet.
Yeah.
She lives 10 minutes away. So I went and had coffee with her the other day, and she asked what I was doing. And I told her, oh, well, today I'm painting cabinets. And she's like, I can help. Let me come over. And I was like, she's like, I'll just stand on a box, because she's very short. And I said, Grandma, how about this? Why don't you just stand up out of your chair right now? And, you know, she kind of like wobbled and tried to stand up, and we were both hissing our pants laughing. And she's like, okay, fine, I can't help you, but like, she still has this fierceness in her where she wants to do everything. So makes me laugh. That's... Yeah, she really makes me laugh. And she was a great boon for me, because, you know, my mother was not around. And so it was nice to not only have her in my life as a grandmother, but just as a guiding force.
Yeah, I mean, she seems like a lightning bolt in a life, you know, like just that energy that you cannot, that is going to get you no matter what. I don't know how to say this. She sounds amazing. And I love that at 9 years old, she told you to sleep around.
She was just like, do not marry the first person you have sex with. And I was like, what? She's like, she was just adamant. She's like, even if it's only two people, fine, but don't marry the first person you have sex with. And I'm like, I'm playing with Barbies. What are you talking about?
Right.
But wow. Then again, the ultimate contradiction of her as a person, she'd look at Madonna and be like, oh, what a hussy. And I'm like, but you just told me I should sleep around.
Right.
And now she's sleep. She's very, very confusing and funny.
Has she read or parts of your book, or have you read it to her? Or is she aware that it is... that she is such a big force throughout of it?
completely. So I recorded the audiobook. And so when I got the first copy, I sent it to her. And she and her nurse listened to it, listened to it every day. And she does have a copy of the hardcover. But she also listened to it with my great aunt, her sister. And they laugh because my great aunt was like, Carol, like, she just captured you completely. Like, so they kind of laugh, and then I get to hear more of their stories because of something that I wrote that reminds them of something else. So it's really, really sweet. And she's very proud of me, which is all I ever really want. You know, I want her to be proud of me, and I know that she is. She always has been. But it's nice to be able to kind of give her this thing that is an encapsulation of all of my feelings about her.
That's really beautiful.
Okay, so let's take a pause and we will be right back.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like, a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. So start getting your best night's sleep in sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. And you can try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee, plus 15% off your first order with code BUTTERY. So head to bollandbranch.com today. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
I think it's safe to say that we have suffered through bras. We've been uncomfortable in them. We've devoted whole episodes to finding good ones. But I'm here to say enough is enough. Enough. Enough.
Drawn the line. Dory, have I ever told you what I did in college when I needed a bra to wear with a fancy dress?
What?
I cut the top of pantyhose and then I duct taped that to my chest.
Oh. Sounds uncomfortable.
Because I didn't have honey love when I was in college.
No. Well, we are here to say no more being uncomfortable. With Honey Love's bras, you will wonder why it took so long to make something so comfortable and so supportive. There's no underwire, but through some kind of wonderful magic, they managed to not sacrifice lift. All while making it in a fabric that's so comfortable, you barely know it's there. Especially the crossover bra. I wear one of these almost every day. I'm wearing one right now because it's so comfortable and it easily fits into my life. But if you like a breathable and versatile legging, Honeylove has you covered on that front too. Plus, they have tanks, shapewear, and their V-bra that has molded cups still without the underwire to keep you from getting that dreaded uniboob effect other more relaxed bras tend to give you. So treat yourself to the best bras and shapewear on the market and save 20% off at honeylove.com/forever. Use our exclusive link to get 20% off, honeylove.com/forever. After your purchase, they'll ask you where you heard about them, and please support our show and tell them we send you. Treat yourself to Honeylove because you deserve it.
You know, one thing I think is really kind of interesting about skin, my skin, but all skin, is that like what it needs now in my 40s is not what I needed in my 30s.
Totally.
Definitely not what I needed in my 20s.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But like, how are you supposed to know what your skin needs?
It's hard. It's hard to know.
Especially when there's just like so many products out there. The overwhelm is real. It's a struggle to even know how to get the results you want, what products to start with. This is why we're super excited to partner with Apostrophe. Apostrophe is a prescription skincare company that offers science-backed medications that are clinically proven to help. I have used Apostrophe. I love it. They will pair you with a board-certified dermatologist who literally creates a personalized treatment plan for your skin. I have done this a few times now. It is so easy to do their online consultation. You upload photos. And like within a few weeks, I had done the consultation and received my treatment plan and my product.
Amazing.
And that is how I became a Tretton Owen gal. I love the Tretton Owen that they sent me. I love their sunscreen. Both products have been amazing on my skin. And you, Forever 35 listeners, can get a special deal from Apostrophe. You can get your first visit for only $5. That's at apostrophe.com/forever35 when you use our code forever35. Now that is a savings of $15. I like that. This code is only available to Forever 35 listeners. So to get started, just go to apostrophe.com/forever35 and click get started. And then use our code forever35 at sign up and you will get your first visit for only $5. Thank you, Apostrophe, for sponsoring this episode. Okay, here we are. Your book ends with you going off to college, and you kind of like hint at the fact in your book that like it doesn't go as planned. Like at the moment you're like, freedom, but also this goes to shit. But you don't, you know, you touch on the first 18 years of your life in your book, and then you've had such an interesting long journey to get to where you are, I guess, career-wise, but also personally as a human. And you know, we were talking before we started recording about how it really aligns with a lot of what Dory talks about in her memoir. So can you give us the kind of abridged version of how you became both a TV writer in your mid-30s, I believe, and moving your way up to a showrunner, which if people are not familiar with the TV business, it basically means like the writer in charge of the writing in the show. So you are an executive producer and you're the main writer.
Right. And yeah, it's not a linear path by any stretch. I think the easiest way to explain how I got here is that I said yes to a lot of things out of desperation and sustainability. So my main focus was always being able to take care of myself. You know, I didn't have a family I could rely on to even call and ask for $50. So, you know, I had to work two or three jobs and kind of put myself in the path of people who were doing what I wanted to be doing so that I could learn from them. Cause I did leave college after the first year. It was just I didn't pick the right place at all. But I also didn't know what I didn't know what I wanted to do. I thought I wanted to be a fashion designer, but that wasn't a linear path. You know, there's no one way to be a fashion designer. So I left, and I think that the jobs that I've had and the people that I've met are what really prepped me for becoming a TV writer. Because at the time that I started writing for television, I was like 37, 38. And I had so many stories and so much experience to bring into that room. And it didn't leave a lot of time for me to feel weird or bad about not having a formal education in it, because I had other things to offer. So yeah, I went back to college when I was 30. I moved around the country a lot. And my agent found me through my recaps that I was doing for Vulture about other TV shows. And she's like, you just have such a good sense of humor and you're such a great writer. You should consider writing for television. I didn't know how to do that. So for the next year, you know, she would send me scripts, and I basically taught myself how to write for television by reading endless amounts of scripts. And I kind of think in dialogue, so it didn't seem like too much of a turn. I just had to, you know, I had to know the terms that would get us to the next step. But then once we got to that next step, I'm like, oh, well, here's what they say. That's no problem. So I learned the technical stuff by just reading a ton of scripts. And I wrote my first spec script. I based it on, you know, a story from my own life, of which I had several. And that was the script that got me my first job. So I really put myself out there. And I think constantly putting myself in the path of letting people know what I wanted to do. I constantly had to tell people, you know, this is what I want to do next. And what happened. And then also saying yes when those opportunities came up, even if I didn't feel 100% confident, is what got me here. Because I didn't want to, you know, constantly be, I didn't want to work. I had great times doing it, but I didn't want to be working at a coffee shop in the morning and a bookstore at night for the rest of my life. You know, I think that if I'd wanted that, I could have had that life and it would have been great, but I wanted more. And I always had this fear as well that I wanted to transcend, because, you know, I grew up with a single mom on welfare, and then she abandoned us, and I grew up with my grandparents, and I just never wanted to have to rely on anybody else to survive. And so I think it just became more important for me to feel the fear and do it anyway, because that was always in the back of my head, that if I don't want to have that life, I can't replicate the kinds of lives that would get me there. And I can't, you know, keep doing the same thing that I've always done.
I love what you said about doing something even though you weren't 100% confident mm-hmm. in it. Because I think, you know, that holds so many people back, right? Like, yes. Imagine if some, you know, if you had been approached by an agent who said, you should write for TV, and you were like, oh, no, I could never do that. Like, just being able to have that, to make that mental shift to say, like, well, you know what? I don't know how to do it, but I'm going to try it is so important. And so kind of along those lines, I'm wondering, you know, what would you say to people who think they're too old to switch careers or do something new?
I sympathize. That feeling is a horrible feeling, to think you're too old to do something. But it's also completely made up. It is a false, it's a false conception that we push out into our culture.
Yeah.
And it is not true. And I think that there, you know, I went back to school when I was 30 years old thinking, well, I wanted to teach, and tried that for a few years and then changed my career again. And, you know, who knows what's going to happen when I'm 50 or 60, I might do something else completely. Mm. But I think that more than anything, I think you have to get out of your own way and really ask yourself, is there something that I could be doing that would actually make me feel better about the life I have or the life I want? And even if you're taking that first step, and it's a fearful step, imagine where you would be 3 years from now. And then imagine if you waited another 10 years to start. It would really be, it's to your own disservice to think that your age holds you back. I think that with age, you get so much more wisdom and you just inherently know things that will be beneficial in any situation. So you can't say, you know, I'm too old to do this. I'm too old. Maybe nobody wants to be a 70-year-old Instagram influencer, but they're out there. They exist. You can do literally anything at any age.
Yeah.
So I think that it's just a matter of, you know, going for what you want and trying really. In order to do that, though, I feel like you have to understand what you want your life to be. And any step mm-hmm. that takes you closer to what you want your life to be is perfect at any age. There's no age limit on having the feeling that you want to wake up with every day, be a part of your life. So I think that's just the first goal, is just to get out of your own way and don't believe the hype. Don't believe the hype. We are a youth obsessed culture for capitalistic reasons and nothing else. Yeah. So do not believe the hype.
Yeah.
You also mentioned in your book that you didn't really even begin to understand. You understood for years that you had depression and dealt with depression, but you didn't understand your depression and wiring until you were 39. And then you say that the first time you felt happy and confident at the same time was at 43. And this made me feel very hopeful, because I feel like so many people are in the same boat of, like, even when you understand that you have a diagnosis or that you deal with mental illness or mental challenges, there's a, you know, the feeling that you can kind of begin to understand it is such a relief. I'd love to hear a little bit about how you got to that place and what advice you might have for other people who are kind of feeling that same way of not yet fully understanding the state of their mental state, their state of their mental state,
right.
Their state of their mental shit, I'd say.
Yes, it is. It is the first step is understanding it and kind of having a diagnosis, if you will. But I think that is genuinely the first step. And what took me through and put me on a path to understanding was the continued work that came after that. So I always felt like depression was something that was kind of crouching inside of me, ready to blow up my life. And, you know, I couldn't control it. And it's just the way that I am. And it's fine. It's not fine literally, but it's like, you know, there's nothing I can do about it. So why would I put my effort there? But then I actually worked with two incredible therapists. So when I was living in New York before I moved to Los Angeles, I had a therapist who was the first person to ever describe depression as something that happened to me, but wasn't always a part, like waiting within me. And that hearing that alone just made me feel like, wait a minute, I do have some control over this then, because with her, I started working on recognizing my own patterns. So what is it that sends me into a depressive spiral? Or what do I feel like when I'm starting to feel depressed? And when should I reach out to people? And when should I start to actually put the work in to addressing this so I don't get to rock bottom every single time I feel depressed? And that was life shifting for me. Just to have somebody say that simple thing was just changed my whole life. And then when I did move to Los Angeles, I had to switch therapists, and my current therapist is truly wonderful at not just helping me recognize the patterns, but she was crucial to teaching me how to talk to myself. And that's why I said, you know, I didn't really begin to understand my depression until I was 43. Because yes, there is a chemical imbalance in me that makes me sadder and more depressed and more, more susceptible to that, of course. But I also, over the years, have learned how to talk to myself in the worst and most negative ways possible, which just exacerbates the thing that is chemically wrong with me. So for me to wake up every day and be like, oh God, you're ugly, you're fat, you're this, you're that, like to instantly run through a checklist of everything that I didn't think I was, or to run through the things that, you know, again, over time became part of a habit for me, it was really detrimental to my mental health. And I didn't realize that I was even doing that until I met someone through therapy who encouraged me to stop doing that, and who genuinely gave me a script of things I could say instead, and who helped me develop a way to speak to myself that made me feel comforted and loved, even when nobody else was giving me that comfort or that love. And I didn't know that was possible. It sounds so rudimentary, and I did not know that it was possible. I thought, you know, you either receive love as a kid or you don't, or you, you know, you figure it out as an adult, you know, in your 20s, or it's too late for you and you don't. And none of that was true. I've never been happier. I've never been more content. I've never been more full of love and able to give love than I am now. And it's because I've learned how to talk to myself and how to treat myself. So my depression is really, it's personal, you know, everyone goes through a different experience, but I think it's really crucial to, if you're someone who enjoys talk therapy, to find a therapist that actually works with you. There are a lot of therapists who will just take your money and listen to you, and they're not actually doing anything to help, because maybe it's not the right fit. So you have to find the right fit, and you have to kind of also be open to knowing what to ask for as you go on. So I don't think it's something that I'll ever master, you know, like I don't think that I'll ever be done with therapy. I don't think that I'll ever be, you know, I thought there was a point a few months ago where I was like, I got this, Donna, like I'm good. I'm okay for it. And then
like
I mentioned,
graduated.
Exactly. Like I did everything right. I'm such a good student. I took my notes. I did everything you asked, and now I don't need therapy.
Yep.
And then she asked me a question about, you know, well, how are you going to respond to your mother either reading your book or not reading your book? And I was like, oh, fuck, we're going to be doing this for like 10 more years. So
I'm here forever.
Here forever. So there's definitely like, that's part of it too, though. You can't go into therapy thinking, you know, I need to fix something and walk away. It's a journey that you're going to be on. If you're really committed to it, it's a journey you'll be on for a while, and you'll learn so much about yourself as you go. And you'll, since you're constantly evolving, the things you learn and practice will also evolve. But that's, I think it's just, again, you have to really, if you are someone who experiences like deep depression or mental health issues, I feel for you. I again, remember vividly just the years of my life where I could not get out of bed, or was, you know, too upset and crying all day. And just imagining that I could still be in that place is shocking to me. It's really sad and shocking in a lot of ways, but it makes me more proud of like having learned this finally and started putting in the work. But it's just the start. And you can take that first step. You can you know, not think of your depression as something that is hell-bent on derailing your life. It's a little something extra that you have to deal with that other people may not, but it's possible to deal with it.
Evolving is hard. So much work to evolve.
Yeah.
It like pays off, but it's like, oh, this is grueling emotional doing work.
Why am I even doing this? It's true.
I know, but, but then it pays off.
Yes. Yes. Because it's, I guess you also, in my case, I had to get to a point where I was more afraid of never being happy than I was of constantly feeling depressed, if that makes any sense. Like, I was way more fearful of the fact that I could live an entire life, the only one we get, and not be happy. And I thought, no, I can't do that. That doesn't feel like right in my soul. So yeah, be afraid of not having happiness and see where that gets you as well.
Yeah. So we're just going to take a short break and we will be right back.
It shouldn't be so hard or expensive to find furniture that exudes elegance, sophistication, and a touch of luxury. And we're happy to say that today's sponsor, Article, makes getting quality furniture as easy as checking the pieces out online. Thanks to their online-only model, they have some really great manageable prices. Article believes in delightful design for every home, so you can get to creating a space that truly reflects your personal style. I now have a space that is quite outfitted in Article. And I have to tell you how not just like seamless, but truly enjoyable the ordering and shipping process was. It was extremely fast. It's affordable, very convenient because I got to pick the delivery time and they sent me updates every step of the way. It was like they knew that I was an obsessive checker on shipping, and they were like, we see you, we honor you, and we're going to support that journey for you. As Dory knows, I have a beautiful bench from Article right when you enter my home. I have some gorgeous planters, and then my favorite, my kind of like surprise favorite piece from Article are the blankets I have gotten for my sofa that my family all hogs. Oh. Including my dogs. My dogs love these blankets so they're like throws on our couch. The dogs try to monopolize them.
Dogs are such blanket hogs.
They know a soft blanket when they see one, I gotta say. So their endorsement, honestly, their endorsement says more than mine ever could. That's how soft these blankets are. Article has all kind of curated furniture from mid-century modern or coastal to industrial, Scandi, boho. So no matter what style you're leaning toward, they have got something for you. And you could really do like every room in your house in a different kind of style if you wanted to. And with Article's team of designers, no matter what piece or how many, you're sure to find the perfect balance between style, quality, and price. Article is offering Forever 35 listeners $50 off your first purchase of $100 or more. To claim it, visit article.com/forever and the discount will be automatically applied at checkout. That's article.com/forever for $50 off your first purchase of $100 or more.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Okay, we're back.
I have to ask you this because when you were on our podcast originally, you revealed that you washed your face with sugar, which was amazing. Do you still wash your face with sugar? Because you do literally have the best skin of any human being to walk the earth. Let's just lay it out there. Not that this podcast is about who has the best skin, but I mean, look.
But look, if I win, I win. I'll take it.
Look, all right, I'm just going to throw it out there.
I do. I wash my face with sugar twice a week. In the summer, sometimes three times a week. And it's just an exfoliant. You know, I just kind of, you know, let it do its thing. But I haven't been someone who's paid a great amount of attention to my skin over time. Like, genetics is truly key to anything that is good about my skin. However, I have decided in the last couple of years, and really greatly fueled by listening to this podcast, there are things that I feel like I can do that help my skin, that actively help me feel better, like in my body. And then also now that I'm doing, like, you know, press and this and that, I don't necessarily just have to go out in the world with dark circles under my eyes. And, you know, there are things that I can do that I don't have to do every day, which makes me feel like I'm taking an active part in my body. I definitely, you know, I keep it as low key as possible. I still use Kiehl's as a moisturizer when I remember. I started adding, Aesop makes this rose oil, like a rose face oil. And I started adding a couple of drops of that to my moisturizer in the winter, because it just makes me feel like I'm kind of keeping it all compact and, like, all the moisture staying in there. I keep it very low key. And I love a witch hazel spritz in the heat. I love just kind of figuring out what feels good. And that's something that, again, is something that I learned recently and over the last few years, is that makeup and serums and oils and you know, things that you can put on your body, it's not just about how you look to the outside world. It's about what makes you feel more like yourself. And so that's what I kind of gravitate towards when I'm buying products or trying products, is that it's not necessarily about how I'm perceived. It's about how I feel. And I think that's been just one of the most lovely things about your entire oeuvre, is that you just emphasize that so much in a way that, like, really hits home for me. And it is about how you feel. It's not about, you know, again, how you're perceived. Yeah. So that, thank you for
it is
for all the product advice and everything over the years.
I mean, please. But it is hard to kind of, like, grapple with. I mean, look, you created Feminist Ryan Gosling, which is hugely
iconic.
Yes. I mean, that's a perfect word for it. And as people who identify with feminism and as feminists, it can be very hard to then kind of also make space for the beauty industrial complex, which is so rooted in misogyny and racism and everything terrible. Mm-hmm. And so you put it very nicely in a way that I feel like resonates, and the way that I aspire to identify with it in my life.
Thank you. I think you're already halfway there, more than halfway there. You on a daily basis are just like, I'm not doing this anymore. Like, it's just very empowering to see you put out into the world, like, this is what's important to me. And you are navigating, you're both finding ways to navigate this horrible, you know, beauty industrial complex that we all have to deal with. And I think that you make really great points, which is something that hits home for me as well and changed the way that I shop, which is, you know, you got to put your money where your mouth is in a lot of ways. So, you know, I buy all my hair care products, and I have for a while, but I'm, like, you know, very excited to discover these new hair care products that are all natural. And I use Bell Bar Organic, which is made by a mom and her two daughters. So it's a family affair. And it feels good. Like, I get to mix stuff up. Like, I'm a scientist and I love that. And they kind of are, you know, their whole business is built around education. And I think that is also hugely important to navigating the beauty industrial complex, is what you're learning and as well as what you're buying. I keep it low key, because I feel like when I buy a bunch of stuff, I feel like I then have to use it and I have to find a reason and I have to, like, partake in it. But if I'm just kind of hanging out, like today on my porch, and I'm like, yeah, you know, I'm feeling a little sweaty today, I'm going to do a witch hazel this, and I'm going to, you know, because I've learned now that, like, you know, this makes me feel good, then I'm going to go for that. And that's totally different. It's a totally different way to be part of it.
I know. And don't you just want to oomph?
Yeah.
Everything you say, I'm just like,
I know.
We would be remiss.
This age is a good age to get
go
into
ahead.
It, right? No, I just think that this age is a good age to get into totally. It as well.
Yes,
yeah, I feel Danielle, like I think we're exactly the same age, and like so much of what you say just fully resonates with me. And you know, even this path to feeling like you're doing things for yourself and not, you know, for it just all really resonates. So thanks for being you. I mean,
just thank grateful. You.
Yeah,
I feel the exact same way about both of you. So thank you.
Oh,
before we wrap up, I feel like we would be remiss not to mention your podcast, which is really funny and smart. And I think our listeners would love if they haven't already listened to it. You cover like the very funny, insane world of film. And I saw what you did. I would just love if you could tell our listeners a little bit about it and what inspired it, because I'm curious if it all kind of connects back to your grandmother in some way.
As everything does. I mean, this was, and I say this as to lots of younger people I know, like my nieces and nephews and people in my life who are like 20 and under, that we had no rules when we were kids. So at the library, it went from like, you know, Little House in the Big Woods to the rest of the library. There was no YA. It was like, you know, you read, you yes, hit the end yes. of the Laura Ingalls Wilder yes, cycle, totally. And then you could read Peyton Place or whatever you wanted. And same with movies. It's like, we didn't have the restrictions. So we just watched everything all the time. And it gave me a real love and appreciation for film and for movies, and in a very organic way. And so this podcast, you know, I Saw What You Did, that I co-host with my friend Millie DiCirico. She is a film programmer at TCM and has been for almost 20 years and is a film expert. Like, she just knows so much about everything. But the way that the podcast came about is that we both lived in LA at the same time, and we would go to the movies together constantly. And every time we left a movie, we would just be talking to each other. Like, you know, we'd be sitting in our cars in the garage at the Arclight talking for like 2 hours, to the point where I would then go to leave and they're like, oh, you have to, like, you definitely are not getting the discount for the 3 hours. Like, you've been here forever. Like, you now have to pay $40 to get out of here. But we would just talk constantly when we left and just have so much to say about movies. And so, Millie and Karen Kilgariff are friends, and Karen came to her and said, you know, they're starting their own network and she'd love to have a film podcast. And Millie was like, you know, I can only think of like one person I'd want to host it with. And then we came up with our idea for the show, which is that we pick a theme every week that we create. And, then we each pick a film and present it to each other, as it fits within that theme. So some of our latest themes are, Looks Like a Pump, Feels Like a Sneaker. And we watched Working Girl and Don't Tell Mom the Babysitter's Dead, because we wanted to talk about movies that, like, you know, taught us how to be women in the world. And so
yes,
it's just so much fun to talk about films from that perspective, for sure.
Oh, it's so good. And you have, I think you have a very similar point of view on Ethan Hawke in Reality Bites as I do, which is what the hell.
Isn't it? And it's that shocking movie, yeah, to watch movies that I watched as a younger person, and I have a completely yes, different outlook.
Yes.
Like, yes, when I was 19, you know, what, 15, 16 when that movie came out, you could not have told me he was terrible for
no,
all the money in the world. I was like, he's the ideal.
Most romantic movie ever.
Ah, so yeah, romantic. And then you look at it in your 40s and you're like, I want everyone to stay. Like, I will dedicate my life to keeping women away from this kind of guy, to keeping people away from this kind of guy. It's wonderful to revisit. I love those films. And that's a theme that we also revisited again later this year. Yeah. But that's a theme that we created called Classic Movie Fuckboys. And that was about The Way We Were and Reality Bites. Because Hubble is also not the greatest guy. I was always told that was like the most romantic movie of all time. And when I finally watched it, yes, I was like, are you kidding me? Like, Barbara Streisand is incredible, and he is just the worst.
The worst.
Just dragging her through this life. Yeah, it's a lot of fun to think about films in that way. And we strive to have fun, but we also you know, we're both really educated, and Millie is like super smart and just has a different, it's a different perspective. It's, you know, two women of color talking about film is still kind of revolutionary in 2021.
Yeah.
And I just hope that in the next 5 years that that's not the case anymore.
Well, yes. This has been, as we always say, a treat, but it really has been a dang treat to have you on the show.
For me as well. And look, I'll come back. I'll be a triple hitter. I'll be the first.
Like the Tom Hanks of SNL. Yes, you're Steve Martin, if you will.
I am enjoying this precedent. Let's do it.
I love it. Well, listen, people need to get your memoir, The Ugly Cry. It's just so fantastic. It's hard to find the words to really nail it down. The words to nail it down, but it's just so moving and funny all at once. I can't recommend it enough. And Danielle, where else can people find you? Even if you don't want to, you know, you're not going to have to engage too much on the Twitter, but where can we find you if we want to just read your tweets?
The best place to find me is Instagram, and it's just my name, Danielle Henderson. Like I said, I've tailored my Instagram to be a very enjoyable experience now. So I like hanging out there.
Good.
And I'm going to say the same for Dory's book. I know that you are, you know, doing everything you can to get on that bestseller list. And I know that you, like, I remember the last couple episodes, you're like, I promise I'll stop talking about it. I won't. I will never stop talking about it. Go and buy Dory's memoir. It is beautiful. And New York Times list or not, it is such a beautiful read, and it's something that the world just needs right now, that kind of connection to humanity and hope. So please go buy your book.
Well, now I'm going to cry. So thank you. Thank you.
Well, I love you both so much.
Oh, we love you. And it's mutual. You're the best. Yeah, I can't wait to come move into that barn, by the way. I'll be...
Yeah, seriously. Let us know when that apartment's ready.
I will be up soon.
Yeah. As soon as it's done, it's going to be like the Forever 35 retreat space to the end of time. So just come on whenever you want.
Yes, please.
Forever 35 is hosted and produced by Dory Shafrir and Kate Spencer, and produced and edited by Sammy Junio. Sam Reed is our project manager, and our network partner is Acast. And we will talk to you later.
Bye.